This is URN Sport.
Hello and welcome to Touchdown, URN Sport's guide to the NFL. We have a very special show for you today, which is, in case you missed our live show, which was on Thursday, the 21st of October. This is just the podcast form, so if you missed that, you can catch up here and enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to University Radio Nottingham. I'm April and joining me today is Dom, and we're doing an episode of Touchdown. How are you, Dom? How's your week? I mean, I kind of know some of it, but go on.
It's been a bit of a disaster with the Miami Dolphins at Wembley, which I'm sure we're going to talk about, but bar that, everything's going quite well. How are you, April? How are you?
Yeah, all right. I feel bad for you because of the weekend. So just to clarify, this weekend, Dom's team, the Miami Dolphins, played in London, and me and Dom and some other people from URN Sport went down to the game. And I mean, the experience was amazing, but the game was not so good for Dom. I don't know if you've seen the highlights back, Dom, but no. When we were in the stadium, I didn't realise that the kicks were like missing by so much, and then the wind was like pulling them back in, especially the second to last kick. It was so far to the right, the commentator even was like, oh, and it's no good. Oh, it is.
Why does this always happen to me? Obviously, we were joined by Kieran, who's a season ticket holder at Nottingham Forest with me. And he was saying, why do you do this to yourself? Why do you collect bad teams to support? And so the Jacksonville Jaguars, let's put this in perspective, haven't won in 20 games. Now, that doesn't sound as bad as that stat makes out. That is nearly a record. They're only 3 games off the record. And they haven't tied a game. They haven't drawn a game. They have lost 20 on the bounce. And Miami lost to them. Miami hoping to go to the playoffs this year. That's dead and buried now. But it was a delight to see so many new NFL fans with Reese, Kieran and Toby there. And we'll get the podcast out soon about their experience on URN Away Days. But the overall performance of two teams wasn't the greatest. And we knew, you know, two pretty much basement teams going into the NFL experience. And we've got to be grateful that we've even got teams coming over. It wasn't the best game. There was quite a few mistakes, some very questionable throws, and there's quite a few penalties for offensive realignment and basic things like that. But we enjoyed ourselves. And April, how was your experience of the day?
Yeah, the experience of the day was amazing. I feel like I said about to like 10 different people, like the day was amazing up until the last 5 seconds, because even until the last 5 seconds of time on the clock, I still thought Miami were going to hold them and it was going to be 20 each and go to overtime. Oh, and I was just explaining the rules of overtime to Kieran, like, this is what happens. Like, one team gets the ball. There's like a coin toss of who gets the ball first. Yeah. And then I was like, oh, but actually we have to get through the 5 seconds first.
And Trevor Lawrence absolutely played us there. Obviously, so they go for a Hail Mary formation, which is obviously the last-ditch attempt. 5 seconds on the clock, was it?
5 seconds, yeah.
And usually in a Hail Mary, everyone sprints down the field, you know, just trying to get an end zone, get into the end zone, and hopefully you pray to God and it comes through. Now, they set up in that formation, and the Jags did a cheeky 5-yard pass in front, so they got in field goal range. So literally, it was a yard. It nearly skims the crossbar of the post. It's just so frustrating.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like even, you know, 5-yard pass with only 5 seconds on the clock is still very risky, because your quarterback has to hold the ball for about 1 to 2 seconds just to give people time to run. Then it takes about 1 second to go through the air. The guy catches it, and then he has like 1 second to drop to the floor, and then time's nearly up. It did look like time was nearly up, but they somehow managed to get to the ground and call timeout with 1 second to go. Yeah, and then the kicker, you said field goal range, but like it was still like a 54 yard.
You were trying to reassure me.
He's going to miss.
Like, oh, he's going to miss. Don't worry, Dom.
It was so far.
I had my head in my hands, and we were just behind some Jaguar fans who were very happy with the final result. But yeah, bless you, April, Kieran, and Toby and Reese for all trying to make me feel better. I did not want to say a word for about an hour. I think I fell asleep with my arms crossed on the way back. I was just angry in my sleep. It took a Mackey's to get me back up and running.
Yeah, I don't know if you know this, Dom, but that Jaguars kicker literally wasn't on the team. Oh. And he wasn't on any team about 2 weeks ago. That was like the first game he ever started. And that was like the fourth kick he'd ever made in the NFL. He was just a random guy off the street. And for him to make two kicks, one was 53 and one was 54, both of them in the last 2 minutes, was very unexpected, seeing as he was unemployed 2 weeks ago.
Thank you, April. This is not what I needed to hear.
It was a bit of a miracle, basically.
Oh, yeah, a miracle. It's a miracle against Miami. And that pretty much ends our season. But it gives Trevor Lawrence his first career win. How did you think Trevor Lawrence played? You know, first pick of the draft, a lot of expectation. Mm-hmm. 5 losses in a row, I believe. How do you think he played?
Yeah, the start was pretty bad. I feel like the start for the Jaguars as a whole was pretty bad. They were the sort of team that, like, you know, they hadn't got off the plane, they were really jet lagged, those sort of cliches. Like, they definitely applied to the Jaguars. And not to rub it in, Dom, but Miami should have made more. As the game went on, though, he did some amazing things. Yeah, overall I'd say he did like middling average sort of, but that's because the start was so bad and then the end got better. And the one touchdown pass that was into the corner, like right under us, that was a like elite top level throw.
That was a top level catch
as well.
Yeah, and let's not forget the Dolphins have got a great, you know, defensive back line, and to get that throw off in such a confident manner, there was no real threat in that pass. Is a sensational ball, and fair play to Trevor Lawrence. Some people have been saying it is the greatest London game of all time. I'm not too sure about that. I think I've been to better with the what was it, the Chargers versus the Titans. April, how do you think that ranks as a game for London?
Of all time is a bit of a big statement, when the two teams that were playing only like played well against each other because both of them are so bad.
Yeah,
it's not like we were seeing, I don't know, Patrick Mahomes versus Lamar Jackson. Then that would be like completely different level. So some point in the history of London games, like, it's been going on long enough, there must have been a game between two teams that were like competent and
not idiots.
Yeah, not doing such so many blown coverages and struggling with like not very good offense and like scheming and stuff.
And we've got to mention the defensive line for both teams barely scratched either quarterback. I mean, there was one sack for the Dolphins, I think.
There was one really important like strip sack from the Dolphins, so where a defensive lineman like managed to like snatch the ball, sort of bat it out of the quarterback's hands. That was like a crucial play, and that was the moment I started believing the Dolphins were going to win, which is a bit of a shame, but that was because that was like the only thing that happened from either defensive line the whole night.
And then obviously the next play, Tua literally throws it to And it was so far in the middle of nowhere. He literally had a desert island around him, had a sea, a Jaguars, I think it was a cornerback, and it was just the worst throw I've seen in a long time. And it really brings into question, is Tua the right man for Miami? He's had just over a year now of playing. And there's even calls for Deshaun Watson, a man who is morally possibly in the worst state of any NFL player at the moment, who we've talked about in previous episodes, is so morally repugnant if proven guilty. Why on earth would we have him at the franchise? And it's just, it's a real sad state of affairs when you look at people like Justin Herbert, and, you know, the Bengals have got a nice young quarterback, and everyone seems to be doing well, bar us. And it's just so frustrating, and it's the end of the season. But one thing I will say is the game has really renewed my love for NFL. I forgot how important it is to be at a game sometimes. And what I'll say to NFL fans who, you know, are just sort of on the borderline of going, oh, I'm a fan, I'd really recommend going. Yes, it is a bit of expense, but the experience is so fantastic.
Yeah, I completely agree, because in the past, Yeah, in the past, I definitely was that person who was like, oh, it's pretty expensive, I don't think I can afford it, I'm not like a really big fan, it's not necessarily the best like use of my time and money, I'll just watch on TV instead. And it is really good that it was on like BBC, and like some random people, like my granddad, watched it.
Oh, did he?
And I don't think he's ever watched like an NFL game, maybe ever, maybe for many years, I don't know. He's probably gonna message me after this like, I've watched games before. But but like the fact of being in the stadium, it made me kind of wish that in the past I'd believed more in going and like tried to like find a way to go previously, and in the future I'll definitely be trying my hardest to go again.
Definitely, I think this might have to be a URN away day on a yearly basis. It was so good. I mean, even outside the ground, everything was really well organised. The people from the train station guiding you to the ground itself is incredible. And one of my favourite moments of the day was Kieran going up the stairs and just said, "Whoa!" Obviously, yeah, there's a few more expletives in there because it's Kieran, and he just absolutely fell in love with the stadium. The performance of the national anthem by two ex-military personnel I thought were fantastic, and when the jets went over, everyone just really, breath was taken away, just the whole spectacle of it, and the spectacle for a game that no American would pay money to see. Just it's mad to think that 60,000 people would turn up to that in Britain, and when about 30,000 would turn up to that in America, it just says a lot about how passionate the NFL UK fan base is. And we were listening to languages, like I heard French, German and Spanish. I'm sure there are many more European NFL fans who came over, but it's really exciting to see the state of the NFL in Europe get back on its feet after a year off. And I really want another game. Two doesn't feel enough anymore after a 3 or 4 years of 4 and 3 games. And I think the Dolphins, Jags, if that is selling out, I think it says a lot about the NFL in this country.
Yeah, you're right. If that was in America, like, the game would not have sold out at all, because yeah, both of those teams had like 1 or 0 wins. Like, it's not the most elite game, but it's still a game in the NFL. Like, all of those players are top tier because they are playing in the NFL. And for the English fans, like, that's all we get. The lowest you know, for this year teams, but we still absolutely love it because it's such a great experience. And yeah, we just hope for some more games in the future, not just 2, like Dom said. Hello and welcome back to Touchdown with April and Dom. Just in the break there, got text from my mum saying she loves that I'm shouting out my family, and there's a shout out for you as well, mum. So everyone's happy. Right, we're going to move on to talking about some games from the weekend, not the London game, the other games. And do you want to start, Dom, speaking about maybe the Titans v Bills game?
Well, I might have, you know, despite saying I've really got back into NFL, I daren't watch any more NFL, so you're going to have to tell me what happened in the Titans game.
Yeah, well, just that the Titans beat the Bills, like, that's in itself is a shock. The Buffalo Bills had only one defeat before this week, and the Titans have had some bad performances, and they also lost to the Jets, and that's the only game that the Jets have won all season. So that's, you know, when you're losing to the Jets, it sort of says a lot about you.
I saw Derrick Henry won offensive player of the week. So did Derrick Henry just run through them then?
Yeah, he, especially like the second half. I feel like that's the story with Derrick Henry every week though, like he starts slow in the first quarter,
he's like a freight
then
train.
He builds up a bit more, and then he builds up, and it gets to the fourth quarter. All the other players are tired, but Derrick Henry, no, that man is like invincible.
I think his fitness is a real part of why he is so excellent. He can really wear a team down. Obviously, I didn't see this game, but I can imagine his sort of game plan, which it seemingly tears up every NFL defense. And the Bills are no mugs. They are a fantastic defense. And a team that, you know, I thought could be in the AFC Championship game, even the Super Bowl, dare I say, but I'm not too sure now. I still think the Bills are a team to be reckoned with, and they'll certainly make the playoffs. They're top of the AFC East comfortably, and the AFC East is an absolute dumpster fire of a division. But I'm a bit worried that if they play a hard-nosed offense like the Titans in the playoffs, then they could get found out, especially Derrick Henry. His fitness is so important to his game, because he can just keep running, head down, run at the man. And when he breaks, he's not lightning, but he's got quite a good pace for someone his size.
Yeah. The thing is, though, you say about the Bills, like, you know, this is kind of a way to beat the Bills. But I feel like their coaching staff are really good at, like, covering over weaknesses. Yeah. Like, if this is maybe a bit of a weakness, it's now been exposed. After this game, I feel like they are going to improve in that area, like, as much as they can. And, yeah, the offense can carry them most of the time, I think. So the Bills definitely should be all right. I want to just move on to speaking about my team, the Chiefs, because we finally won a game.
At 500, 3-3. I'm sorry, for a team that have just been in the Super Bowl to be 3-3, I think you're third in your division, aren't you?
Yeah, well, the division's like
surprisingly
good.
And we'll talk about the Raiders in a little bit, but 3-3, when we looked at the scores, you were down to the Washington football team. Mm. Again, a dumpster fire of an organisation. What is going on at the Chiefs?
The start of the game was just like...
You always start slow, though. Always.
It's just terrible because, again, we gave away three turnovers. So the previous few weeks, we haven't done a show, but the Chiefs have, like, lost the turnover battle 4-0. I think three games in a row, or at least definitely two games in a row.
And the Paddy Mahomes throw, the interception was awful, from what I understand.
There was two interceptions and one fumble. The first interception was definitely not his fault. It was a drop from one of the receivers. Literally went through the guy's hands. And if you're getting your gloves on it, you really need to be catching it. Mm. And then the second interception from Mahomes, it was a, like, he was going down, he was being sacked and he was getting the ball away, but he really shouldn't have thrown it in that situation.
A mature, dare I say it, a Brady, and we love Brady on this show, he doesn't throw those balls. Because taking the sack, you're still alive, the ball's still in your court. And I just think Mahomes, he's definitely not been found out. Everyone needs to calm down. This is the first bad start to the season, fair play. April just gave me the devil eyes there. Jesus. That the Chiefs have had in a long time. Now, they're still very good position to make the playoffs. And it sort of brings us to the AFC.
Mm.
Who is going to be the top two seeds? Who's going to be home for most of the... The Chiefs have got to keep start winning now. They've lost three games, and dare I say it, you can't... I know this is a new extra game season, but three is a lot of defeats to be first seed. And Arrowhead is almost as good as, you know, Travis Kelce in making an opposition feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, the home field advantage is important, but I feel like we could still win the division. I feel like going for the top two seeds is probably a bit, like, it's a bit out of reach. It's gone now, probably. Mm. But just looking at the AFC West, the Chargers and Raiders are both on 4 wins and the Broncos and Chiefs are both on 3 wins. So we're only really one game behind. And, yeah, I feel like we can definitely make up one game on the Raiders and Chargers. We'll talk about the Raiders maybe in a minute. Ooh, but because some stuff's been going down there. But, like, to make up one game and win the division, I think it's possible. It's just the fact that in other divisions, like the Bills are on 4 wins in the East, the Ravens are on 5 wins in the North, and the Titans, who we just said, are on 4 wins with the South. There's just, like, some of those teams have really easy schedules, and they definitely can, like, stat out, like, with quite a few wins, whereas the Chiefs probably do have some harder games.
Well, let's just review some of your games. Okay, you go to the Giants again. A dumpster fire of an organisation. Then off to the Packers, who after their first game have been quite good. The running game, unsuspectedly, has been their real sort of main source of...
Surprisingly, they have two good running backs, which normally a team only has one, so to have two is amazing.
I'd easily say their running back... Oh, actually, Dallas has got a good running back pair. Their running back at the moment is definitely... Running back duo is definitely really good. And could help them do quite well this year. Then you're off to the Raiders. That's tricky. The Cowboys, then the Broncos, then the Raiders again. Chargers, Steelers, Bengals, Broncos. That is a hard schedule.
Yeah, and just to explain to new fans, like, the schedule that you get given is on, like, a rotational year-by-year basis, but it also does depend on where you finished last year. So because the Chiefs won the division last year, we are put with other teams who won their division, such as the Packers, and I think you said also the Steelers, maybe. Mm. Like, so because of the fact we had a good season last year, we've got more harder teams this year, which isn't necessarily what we need at this moment, where we've had a bad start to the season, but... Yeah, there are a few sprinkled in a few hopeful wins there.
I'm going to be honest, your next four games, the first on the Giants, you need to. If you can't win that, then I think that's enough from the Chiefs this year. But the Packers, Raiders and Cowboys is by far the toughest stretch. Mm. And let's not forget, the Cowboys are a good little team this year, and I did not expect to be praising Mike McCarthy, not Mick McCarthy. but yeah, it's bizarre how the Chiefs have got three losses this year. Do you think you'll make the Super Bowl?
I don't know. I feel like that's a bit too far away to think, but I think we can make the playoffs.
Mm.
Once we're in the playoffs, if we're like, if we've like improved over the season, once we're in the playoffs, maybe we could do something special. But I'm just really not confident in the defense. And if we came up against like the Ravens, I think that's a bad matchup. The Bills, I think again, they have people who can like play it over the top, and our defense is just bad on the back end. So we like have a lot of potential to struggle, but there's also still many weeks until the playoffs. So there's many, many times.
I think 11
and weeks
more games.
So to get improving.
But like, if we look at your challenges, the Buffalo Bills never won a Super Bowl. The LA Chargers never been to a Super Bowl. The Raiders, who we'll talk about, are in absolute disarray. The Ravens are 5-1. They're probably the favourites now.
Mm.
The Bengals 4-2, and the Titans 4-2. Now the Browns are still an outside chance, and maybe the Steelers. I wouldn't put money on them.
Well, the Browns, Baker's now injured. It's been confirmed Case Keenum is starting tonight, which brings us on to tonight's game, the Thursday night football. It is the Browns. They have confirmed that basically their starting quarterback, Baker Mayfield, got injured, and like he re-aggravated some shoulder injury from previous weeks, which I feel like it happens so often in the NFL where players are injured and then they come back.
They come back around like 80%.
Yeah,
and you need to be 100% in the NFL, because think of the hits they're taking, and everyone goes, "Oh, it's just rugby with pads." No, those are weapons. Like, the hits are harder; they can come from any angle. So this argument that rugby is somehow a tougher sport is just nonsense. But I worry for the Browns. This is their make or break game, and it's actually same with the. To be fair, the Broncos, they know what they are. They're a very middling team, and their record flatters them. They played some quite nice, easy teams to get off, and they've sort of been found out. But if the Broncos could beat the Browns, I think it ends the Browns' sort of road to the playoff, and they've been gradually building, and this could be their first step back in a few years.
Mm.
The Browns were so good against the Chiefs last year in that, was it the AFC
Championship game? Yeah.
Yeah, was it? Okay. And that was a really exciting game, and they just haven't been able to get any momentum back, and that is a bit worrying. I think the Browns are everyone's second team after how lowly they've been, you know, one win in two years, and bless them, they've come back. They have come back, but I'm going to say the Broncos can beat up on bad teams. Teddy Two Gloves, Teddy Bridgewater, I think he's going to get the win tonight.
I'm still going to back the Browns. Case Keenum, he had that one amazing game with the miracle in Minnesota, whatever that was.
Yeah.
But like with good coaching, that's my point. The Browns have, I feel, a lot better coaching than the Broncos, and the Broncos sort of rely on this sort of idea that they have a good defense. But
they have got, yeah. To be
they
fair,
have an all right defense, but like in reality, a good defense or a good offense, the offense is going to win. Yeah. And maybe this isn't going to be a good offense, but I feel like good coaching, they're going to keep it to give themselves a chance tonight, the Browns.
I just don't think the Broncos, they think they've got a good defense. It's still 2014-15 whenever they won that Super Bowl. I'm afraid it's not Von Miller. He's not the, you know, the linebacker he used to be. He's not the threat he was anymore, so... Oh, I'm gonna stay Broncos.
You're staying with Broncos.
I'm gonna stay with Broncos.
I'll stay with the Browns.
Is it at Mile
then?
High? I think it's at Mile High.
Yeah, I think
Mile
so.
High, which is, guess what, a mile high, and it's quite cool. If you're a new NFL fan, if you just watch your first game tonight, you'll notice everyone has to have like air packs because it's so high and they're playing such intense sport. There's barely any oxygen, so that is always a great home advantage.
Sorry to interrupt, but it's actually at the Browns.
The dog pound. The dog pound. Very intimidatory place. It is the den of the NFL. That's what I'd say.
Hello and welcome back. It's April and Dom with the Thursday sports show. I think that's what it's still called. But we're doing a show of Touchdown, the NFL guide to...
The URN guide to the
NFL.
The
URN guide to the NFL.
Guide to URN. We haven't got like Tom Brady describing Jack and Izzy's indie show. I think we should try and get him in contact with us.
We're now going to move on to talk about the NFC, and in the NFC there are loads of really good teams and a few, and one especially, really bad team. One team still has zero wins, and that's the Lions. They're the only team in the whole NFL with zero wins, which it doesn't really feel like that should go with the Lions because they've been in loads of close games that I swear have been lost on like the final kick of the game. But if you're going to lose, you're going to lose, and I guess they've just lost every game.
It says a lot about Jared Goff, though, doesn't it? And Matthew Stafford, obviously, on a trade deal. Matthew Stafford, who was such a servant to that franchise, gets out, goes to the big bucks in LA, and suddenly the Rams are a good little side.
Yeah, no, the Rams doing very well with 5-1 right now. Yeah, just that one loss, which I feel like it might have been to the Cardinals themselves.
I think it was, yeah.
So, yeah, the Rams, they're always known as having a good defense, and they obviously do have the best defensive player in the league, Aaron Donald. He's just a beast. We've talked about him before on this show, I feel like, quite a lot, because he's just so good. And yeah, now they have like a quarterback who can, you know, execute the plays that they want to. And I feel like the coaching on that team is so good as well, that they're constantly coaching players to be like wide open. And Matthew Stafford is always going to find a guy if he's wide open. So
yeah. I think Matthew Stafford's main, he's not flashy, he's not Mahomes, he does his job well, and that job is pretty simplistic. But when you've got players like Cooper Kupp is one of two men to currently be, I think, I can't remember the stats, but I think 6 touchdowns in 6 games, over 600 yards, I want to say. The only other person to do that was in the great New England Patriots side, Wes Welker, in the 2007 Patriots side that went undefeated during the regular season. Obviously, they didn't win that Super Bowl, but they're a fantastic side and real game changer in how the game's played. Now, to be anywhere near that and to have the same wide receiver stats as Wes Welker, well, it says it all, really. Cooper Kupp this year is the man to have on your fantasy team. He's so good. And Matthew Stafford has shocked us all. I think we're all expecting him to do his job, but to beat the Buccaneers, like, it, the Rams could be the NFC championship side and go through to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, the only thing stopping them is the division, and in their division is a team with zero losses, the 6-0 Cardinals, which I expected the Cardinals to do all right, but when they're in that division with other teams, you expect them to still like lose occasionally, and the defense like last year wasn't so good and stuff, but they are just like, obviously they've lost not a single game, like they're just like next level now. They have to be taken seriously.
Oh, definitely. Kyler Murray, you know, the little man, has stepped up in the big occasion. He's fantastic to watch. And the whole sort of Texans lads who've come over, DeAndre Hopkins, JJ Watt, they've come over and they've been absolutely sensational. It says a lot about the Texans franchise, what's going on down there. An absolute, again, a dumpster fire of an organisation. The Cardinals are a joy to watch each week. And you know what? They could make their first Super Bowl appearance since 2005. But there's so many good teams. It's
really
mad
is.
In the NFC. Not so much in the AFC, but the NFC is not wide open, but literally any team of the good, any, I'd say about 6 teams could win it.
I feel like last year the AFC was so stacked and then the NFC had like middling to average teams.
Even
and
the Bucks were pretty rubbish, weren't they?
Yeah, at the start the Bucks were so bad and then they just won like the last 7 games in a row or something.
Which was sickening.
Wow. But now it's like reverse because the NFC has like this little bunch of elite teams at the top and then everyone below that is sort of middling to bad. There's no like just good. It's either you're amazing or you're middling. But yeah, the teams that are the good teams are Cardinals, Rams that we both just spoke about. The Bucks are also 5-1 with Tom Brady. The Packers, who Dom did mention before with the 2 running backs team, they've only lost 1 game, so they're 5-1. And another team which people always expect to do so well, people big them up every year, and this year they were on Hard Knocks, which is like a documentary series, and whoever's on Hard Knocks, people just fall in love with all the players, think they're going to be absolutely amazing, and then they end up being terrible. But not this year. Everyone thought they were going to be amazing, and they have been amazing. The 5-1 Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah. Dak Prescott coming back from such a hard off season, pretty much his leg was falling apart on pitch and you could just see where it snapped and it was a horrible injury, and then his brother sadly committed suicide. To come back to be 5-1 is sensational. They are such a massive franchise. It's like Man United getting back on their feet. As much as you dislike them, you've got to applaud because there's so much pressure on that team. You cannot underestimate the press down in Texas. always wants them to do badly because they will sell more papers. When they do well, they'll always sell papers, but if they do badly, then the press are on them. It's nothing like the English tabloids, it's so much worse. And to get through all that off-season hardship and to dominate like they're dominating, I know the NFC East is an absolute rubbish division, but the Cowboys, do you think they could make their first Super Bowl since the 90s?
I don't know about the Super Bowl. They're going to get to the playoffs.
Playoffs is confirmed. Playoffs is pretty much confirmed. They've got 5 wins. Like, I can't see the Washington football team getting 5. The Eagles are pretty average.
I don't know. Some, like, bad injury could absolutely derail the season, which obviously is what happened last year, but it was a little bit earlier than this. But another player, I just want to mention one player for the Cowboys, because I did not know this player before Hard Knocks, the documentary, but now, every time I watch a game, he always does amazing, and I now know him from the documentary. It's Trayvon Diggs. Mm-hmm. He has the absolute cutest child probably ever. His like 4-year-old son Aiden was like on Hard Knocks just basically getting confused between Patrick Mahomes and Dak Prescott, and this kid was so cute, and he was like in the stands cheering Trayvon Diggs, that's my dad. And like, this cute kid must be having the time of his life because his dad has had 7 interceptions in 6 games. I think that must be another unreal record breaking stat, right?
That is incredible. And I think the Great Wall of Dallas, when Dallas has a good defense, it's got a good running game, and it's got a good quarterback. Those are the 3 main ingredients, surprisingly, when you're good on both sides of the ball and you're not rubbish on special teams. It's quite hard for you to lose, and they should absolutely stack up on wins in this division. They just got to beat a few good teams, and hopefully they don't get injured. That means they can maybe rest a few players. If they're playing, you know, the Giants in December, they can rest a few players. And with this extra long season, I think they all get home advantage. And AT&T Stadium, I think, holds 90,000. It's the biggest grossing stadium for the NFL, bar Wembley. And I can just see Dallas, after so many years of hurt, it's pretty similar to the England football team, really. So much potential, yet wasted. And I think with the Dallas Cowboys at home, AT&T rocking, Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott firing, the defense holding out, it's going to be quite hard to beat them. Although, if they mess up, the Packers at Lambeau Field is a very difficult place to go. And I don't know.
There's lots of options in the NFC.
Yeah. The Rams, for me, being able to beat the Bucks, and they were the only team pre-game that Vegas put money on to beat the Bucks. I don't see Tom Brady doing 2 in a row. No team's done 2 in a row since, I can't name it, and that's really poor.
It's probably the Patriots.
It might be the Patriots,
03-04.
I think it was. But no team's done it for such a long time in this modern era of NFL where it is designed for the winner to come last. That's the great thing about NFL. There's no money, there's no takeovers. It is just everyone has the same chance. And if you're bad, that is your fault. If you're good, congratulations, that's down to you. But I just love how the NFL, you don't know what's happening. It's not like the Premier League where there's only 3 teams in it. There's about 10 teams who I could reasonably make an argument for them to win the Super Bowl this year. And the NFC's got quite a few of those teams.
Yeah, you say, like, don't know what's happening. But there was a bit of a story of, like, the people not knowing what was happening behind the scenes this week. A bit of a bad story about the NFL.
Not good.
So John Gruden was, past tense, the head coach of the Raiders, Las Vegas Raiders. And he has been their coach for, like, 4 years. And before that, he was on the Monday Night Football broadcasting team. So he was basically a commentator on like the biggest game of the week every week. He was like a big face of, you know, ESPN and NFL.
Graham Souness.
Yeah. That's a good comparison, actually. So he's now, was back now as a coach, and he'd been their coach for, maybe 4 years, but he signed to like a 10-year deal. So he was like going to be the future. He was like the whole identity of the team and everything.
Moving to Vegas.
Yeah, like everything big that's happened recently with the Raiders, even they were on Hard Knocks, the documentary, like it was all about him. And this week, or maybe last week, some emails from, I want to say, like,
investigation going into the Washington, what was the Washington Redskins franchise, with alleged sexual assault, racism. And his emails have come out, and Well,
yeah, I think these emails are from maybe like around 2010, 2011. Yeah.
But it's like, still an excuse.
Exactly. What 10 or 11 years ago is not that long. And also, like, 10 or 11 years ago, John Gruden was like 45. Like, he is a grown man. He should absolutely know better not to think these things, and especially not to write them to anyone in an email, or, you know, say them to anyone in person. He was basically like racist, homophobic, very sexist. He was even making jokes and like snide remarks about the NFL commissioner Roger Goodell, and how
I don't mind him taking the mick out of Goodell, but
it's just like his own employers.
It's just absolute horrific. I haven't read it because it would just make me angry.
Yeah.
I've read what's been written about it and what's been said about it. And it is impossible for that man to get ever employed again.
Absolutely, yeah. So he was like, basically one email came out, I think, where he like said one racist thing. And then 2 or 3 days later, a whole other bunch of stuff was like released from his emails. And after that, he basically stepped down from the team. I feel like in a way that's a bit like dodgy on the Raiders. Why didn't they just fire him after the first one?
I think he stepped down so he doesn't get the payout. So I think he's trying to leave with the smallest amount of dignity.
That makes sense.
Which
for the Raiders.
For the Raiders makes a lot of sense. But John Gruden is someone who I used to really enjoy, and
he won a Super Bowl.
Won a Super Bowl with the Bucks, and that America's Game is one of my favorite because the personality of that, what he's presented as, is this really accepting coach. And obviously, Carl Nassib, is it?
Carl Nassib
was the first openly gay NFL player. And for him to be in that situation must have been awful. Imagine finding out your boss was homophobic, sexist, and you've taken this really bold step. And
And
like, this is such a macho sport. It must be so awful for Carl. And you know what? I think Carl's probably come out a bit stronger because he will, you know. One thing I'll say about Carl is he is a very good player. That doesn't mean he won't get traded, he won't get moved on. There will be a time when no team wants him because he's too old or whatever. That's not because he's gay or he's an openly gay man. It's because he's just an average player. And to come through this, to, you know, still have his squad, still be an important part of the defense at a franchise, he must feel so torn. And to still hold his head up high and be such a proud member of the community in such a macho sport where there have been gay players who've come out after, but to be the first man to come out during playing is fantastic for Carl. And hopefully the Raiders can move on from such an awful, awful situation.
Yeah, he only came out like in this summer.
I think it was August, yeah.
Yeah,
August.
In the summer. And he did sort of announce that he was taking like, I think, a day or maybe like a morning off from the team training. This was after this had all come out and after Gruden had also stepped down. But it's like Carl Nassib got his chance through Gruden. Like Gruden gave him his chance. Yeah. That was like, you know, the person he was always trying to impress to get his spot on the team. And obviously he gave him his chance to play professionally in the NFL. And of all the franchises, for this to have happened to their head, like to have been their head coach, like the Raiders, it literally makes the least sense. They were one of the first teams to have a black quarterback. Yeah. They are such a progressive team in general. And also the fact that they have the first openly gay player playing this year, like, it's just absolutely appalling. It just paints the NFL in such a bad light yet again, which is just...
It doesn't, like, the NFL just keeps going from badly organised. I will say it does get a lot of race issues right. It hasn't in recent years got one or two things right, but this year there's been a real emphasis on black history, playing the black American national anthem before the first game. They've really gone hard on, we're going to make this game for everyone. I think that's their motto for the year. And this to be the year where, you know, a man has been fired, and rightly so. It sort of suggests there's something's going right, because this is in the past and it's been found out. So I'm trying to look at the positives here.
Yeah, I guess it's positive it's been found.
It's been found, it's been dealt with, and I think the Raiders organisation is better without Gruden. And it is a shame. It is a shame that we have to talk about this instead of, you know, the packed NFC or, you know, the Miami Dolphins being rubbish. But we have to, because otherwise it will just go under the carpet. And it's such a disappointment for the Raiders, and they're always a franchise that will take the unwanted. I think that's the phrase Al Davis has used in the past, the former owner. He says, we'll take anyone as long as we can win. And if you look back at some of the 70s football, it is proper dirty NFL. It's a real community. It's bizarre to think of. It's an island mentality of, we're the broken toys that no one wanted. And I think that has carried on in their identity to a little bit. And for that almost to be a little bit ruined by John Gruden is a bit of a shame. But hopefully the Raiders will continue and being a progressive team, and hopefully they will win in spite of John Gruden, not thanks
exactly
to.
I feel like, and also this week the team did win, so the players have like rallied around, and I just hope that for the actual players and all the other coaches, I guess, that, you know, it, as far as we know, it was only Gruden that was involved with sending any emails like this, and obviously the investigation is ongoing, I think, into like the Washington football team and like their mistreatment of like women, and also mistreatment of anyone who's not like a white man in his 50s. Ongoing, so I feel like maybe in the future more stuff like this might come out, or other emails might get like released of other coaches. But obviously we just hope that like the investigators do the best they can, and that everyone who needs to not be a head coach and like a leader of men stops being head coaches.
Yeah, and one thing we'll say is, in spite of this, when we went to the NFL in London, there was so many different people, and it wasn't a completely male audience. There was men, there was women, there was black, there was white, there was everyone there, every ethnicity, and everyone was happy. I mean, there's a lot of beer.
Spirit of sport.
Yeah, it is a sport for everyone, especially in this country where, it seems so many people love it, and there's such a mix of people. There's people who you might not associate with sports, there's jocks who love football. It is just a perfect place to come and watch sport, and we can't recommend it enough.
So that was our live show from last night, Thursday, 6 to 7. Please do listen in to URN on the website, urn1350.net. On that Thursday session, it's like a rotational slot, so occasionally Touchdown will be on every few weeks or so. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you soon. And as always, keep it URN.